You are listening to Radio RMN. This is Raylan Allen. I'm the publisher of RumorMillNews.com. And if you go over to RumorMillNews.com, you're going to find a number of extremely interesting articles today. And I think the most interesting is one posted by our Mrs. Smith. He's one of our resident astrologers. And he says that today after sunset in Washington, D.C., there is a yod to Jupiter, and it's going to occur, this same yod to Jupiter is going to occur four times through September with many astro coincidences to note. A yod is like the finger of God, and it's one of the most important things that can happen. And so I just urge you to go over and read that article and follow through on all of the links that he has posted there and in the threads. Take a look at the threads. Now, the other thing that I want to talk about before we get back to John is many people tuned in today thinking they were going to hear an interview with Paul Pantone, the inventor of the heat. Paul and I did an interview over the weekend. We can't do it during the time that Rumor Mill News is on the air. In other words, we can't do a live interview because he is teaching Monday through Friday, literally from 8 in the morning until 8 in the evening, and he's got 4 weeks of these classes going. Well, I thought that I knew how to edit a pre-recorded interview. I found out that I didn't, that I just made a mess of it. And so the man who does the technical editing for our podcasting offered to help me, but he was only able to get the first hour done. So after John DiNardo today, I'm going to have the first hour of my interview with Paul Pantone, and then tomorrow, after Wayne Jett and discussion of what's going on in the world today, we're going to have the rest of my interview with Paul Pantone. So if you were tuning in for Paul's interview, you'll get half of it today and half of it tomorrow. We're talking with John DiNardo, who, as I said, has been on the cutting edge of the conspiracy for as long as I can remember. I mean, John, when I finally got into the world of conspiracy, you were the big name in the world of conspiracy, you and Brian Redman of Conspiracy Nation. But anyway, you were describing the long tail of the comet in relation, and I think you were just about getting to the Chinese and what the, how the Chinese reported it.
Right, as this comet punctures the heliosphere, the plasma heliosphere surrounding the solar system, it pulls with it lots of plasma, a trail of it. And because the plasma is electrically charged, it has an elastic character to it. The comet, it just clings to the comet because opposite charges attract. And if the comet is zero charge, no charge, then the positively charged plasma has an attraction to zero charge, which is in a more negative nature.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so it picks up all this plasma, just like a bee would pick up a stream of bubble gum going through a bubble gum bubble.
Right.
And there's an elasticity to it, an electrical elasticity to the stream of plasma. So as the comet gets closer and closer to the sun now, the sun is highly negative in charge. And as the comet gets closer, the plasma feels a greater and greater attraction to this negative sun. So the tail of this comet now, it starts racing at a greater velocity toward the comet, which the comet nucleus, which is, you know, on the leading edge of it, its travel toward the sun, which is starts to, the tail starts to race forward toward the nucleus of the comet because it's being attracted by the negative charge of the sun. This causes the comet, this bubblegum streak, more or less, to become encircled and envelop the nucleus of the comet. So what you have first, initially, as the comet comes into the solar system, it looks like a long trailing stream. It looks like a roller coaster because there's also a sort of a waving motion to it. and it looks like a red glowing roller coaster. It was called by the Mexicans, I believe, Quetzalcoatl, the plumed serpent.
Right.
So you can imagine a serpent, a wavy, ripply serpent that is, has a plumed effect, meaning that it's sort of expanded or with a glow all around it. So you have a serpentine figure in the sky with a huge ball of blooming glow around it. And that was called Quetzalcoatl, the plumed serpent.
Right.
By the people, I believe, in Central America. I think that's correct. And also the Chinese people around the world saw it, and the Chinese saw it as a dragon. And every Chinese New Year, ever since, the legend has continued on of this plumed serpent or this dragon. And that's why you see the Red Dragon Dance being performed on Chinese New Year's.
And you know, I have been up in San Francisco when that Red Dragon dance is performed. You know, I've seen the dragon dance, 200 feet long, maybe. You know, it takes up like two full blocks in San Francisco. And I never thought about it, but my God, that does look, you know, if it looks like a comet's tail, it really does.
It's wonderful how the Chinese have reproduced, recreated that, reenacted this
nature
in the skies.
Also think about the firecrackers and the fireworks, because when the dragon goes through, it's accompanied by fireworks. So that it's literally, I don't know if anybody has ever been to a Chinatown when the Red Dragon goes through, but the Red Dragon is literally on fire as it's going down. Exactly like
wow.
A comet's tail would be.
That's amazing. I didn't recall. You're right. They do have lots of fireworks going on around the Red Dragon, which would further, characterize this event.
You know, now, I have to admit,
I
have not seen a Chinese New Year parade in San Francisco since 1967.
Wow.
And
yeah, but you remember a lot of fireworks going on.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, once you've seen this thing, you never forget it. But what if they don't do it anymore? See what I'm saying?
What if they don't have
the fireworks? Yes.
Oh,
what if the city has
Legends, I mean, yeah, it could be this custom could be suppressed by law, you know. They can do anything they want, but it still doesn't. This still doesn't bury the truth. These people in China saw this comet come in. It looked like it just very much like the dragon dance that you see. It was called the Red Dragon. And the people in the Central America saw it, and they called it Quetzalcoatl, the plumed serpent. It was a comet. It probably was not Planet X, because Planet X would be much larger. However, any one of those bullets or shotgun blasts from Planet X would be enough to devastate Earth, because Planet X drags, because of its enormous size, it has a gravitational attraction. It's like a vacuum cleaner traveling through space. So as it passes, all kinds of celestial bodies, which range in size from red iron oxide dust to rocks, boulders, asteroids, meteors, all the way up to the size of comets and even small planets. And Venus, of course, was one of them that, in the last intrusion of this Planet X, Venus was one of those small planets that was held in the gravitational grip of Planet X. And that Venus nestled in, according to the great Immanuel Velikovsky, it nestled in and became the planet Venus into solar orbit.
Mm-hmm.
What you have, imagine now this comet getting closer to Earth. It is drenched now. The tail has pulled up more or less like you would pull up the train of a bride's gown from the floor. And now you have this tail of plasma, red glowing plasma, encircling the entire comet. So now it's changed in shape from a long, wavy, roller coaster-like glowing serpent to something like a big red glowing ball.
Mm-hmm.
Um, when it gets close to Earth, it's loaded with this positive charge. Earth doesn't have the same positive charge. Earth is much more in the negative, is not drenched with plasma. So Earth appears electrically to be much more negative in charge than this near passing comet. As a result, positive charge, just like men are attracted to women, opposites attract. The positive charge is attracted electrically, and it jumps across the gap, the narrow gap between this near-passing comet and planet Earth. In the same way that your hand, as you're touching, walking toward your car on a cold day, the air is dry, and you go to touch the doorknob, door handle on a car, the metal handle, one fraction of a second before your finger actually makes contact, perhaps that instant in time when your finger is maybe one thousandth of an inch away from metal, the close proximity allows the charge built up on your body to jump across that tiny one thousandth of an inch gap between your fingertip and the door handle, and a spark occurs. And the spark is in the order of several thousand volts, believe it or not. I mean, it would be enough to kill you if there was enough current there. And that's what happens when you walk across the carpet and touch something, some metal, and you get zapped. On my deck, for example, I've got plastic wood. I'm constantly getting zapped when I touch the metal grill.
Oh, yes.
So I have to actually carry along with me a resistor. I have to tape a little, like a 1,000 ohm resistor to my pinky finger. So every time I go to touch something, I discharge slowly, controllably discharge from my body that way.
I have to say that some of our readers have lost our thread. I've got a reader that says, "What is the dragon?"
The dragon is the...
I can figure out what the dragon is in relation to the comet, but what has it got to do with 2012?
Well, the comet is coming back again. Planet X drags with it many comets in its huge, enormous field, gravitational field. And this gravitational field is probably billions of miles in diameter. Visualize this. Planet X is a beehive. And we've had a quarterback football player throws the beehive like a football.
Oh, my God.
Throwing it into our solar system, and all these bees are swarming around the beehive. That's what you have. You have a similar vision with Planet X.
Enormous number of bees or small celestial
bodies circling it, large celestial bodies, actually.
Okay, let me just put it into context. You are saying that the events in the Bible that occurred approximately 1,500 years ago, the floods, the disasters, that were also written about in China at about the same time, and they called it the Great Dragon, and in South America they called it Quetzalcoatl. I think I'm pronouncing that right. This is Planet X coming back.
It's probably comets in the outlying field. It's one of the bees that is being held in one of the bees surrounding the beehive. Planet X, let's say Planet X is analogous to the beehive. And the comet that actually ravaged Earth 1,500 BC was one of the comets, one of the bees surrounding that beehive that came in, and it was large enough, even though it was just the size of a bee compared to the beehive, it was large enough. Imagine how, if you were to draw that, to bring that to scale, if a bee is as to the planet comet Venus as a beehive is to Planet X, imagine how large Planet X must be.
Right.
So that's what you have. You have a comet in this outlying field of Planet X being drawn into our solar system, pulling with them a plasma from the heliosphere, first forming what looks like a long tail, glowing tail appears to be a serpent. And then that tail then, as it gets closer to the sun, it begins to compress, pull up fast, and catch up to the this nucleus of the comet, and then encircles the comet. Now you have a tremendous amount of positive plasma charge, charged plasma, which is electrified gas, positively charged gases encircling this comet. Let's say it was Venus back in 1500 BC. Now it gets close to Earth, it wants to discharge, just like your finger. We went through the analogy. When you touch something metal in it, you get the zap. Well, that's exactly what happens electrically between this large body and Earth. And what do you have? The Grand Canyon is created by that discharge. You have arc welding. You have electrical arc welding. And that's how the Grand Canyon was formed.
So do you think that the Grand Canyon was formed 1500 BC or...
It could have been 1500 BC, or it could have been a previous passage of Planet X. It could have been the one before that was 3600 years before that, which was 5000 BC, and that was the time of the great flood of Noah. Well, the whole earth was flooded then, and then, of course, you have, how did the flood occur? Well, we had a passing body that had a lot of water on it. And again, there's a gravitational pull in addition to the electrical pull, attraction between that body and Earth. Well, we talked about the electrical attraction, which causes discharges and sort of arc welds, etches a deep groove into planet Earth, which we now call the Grand Canyon. But there's also gravitational forces between the two celestial bodies, that body, passing comet, and planet Earth. The gravitational force then would pull water from one planet to another. The passing planet, probably according to Velikovsky, I believe, a passing comet back around 5000 BC had a lot of water on it.
Right.
It sucked the water gravitationally out of the planet, and it was shot down to Earth, and that's how we got the Great Flood. Flooded the entire world.
You know, going back to them, take a look at the map of the Persian Gulf and the Straits of Hormuz. And when you look at the Straits of Hormuz, you know, I am wondering if, you know, the Garden of Eden wasn't the Persian Gulf, you know, isn't on the seabed of the Persian Gulf. And maybe one of these arcs literally cut a Grand Canyon there, and that is the Straits of Hormuz, which allowed, you know, the, I think it's the Indian Ocean, to cover... We're talking with John DiNardo, and you can hear the music. This is Radio RNN on the Micro Effect Broadcast Network, and we will be right back. Rumor Mill News Radio, this is Raymond, and I am talking with John DiNardo. And John, while we were on break, I pulled up Google Earth, and I Googled, you know, the Straits of Hormuz. And I swear to God, I think they were formed by what you're talking about. There's an island in the Straits of Hormuz. There's a little island out there. And when you look behind that island, you know, on the, gosh, I don't know what country it is that it's next to, but when you look at that island, it looks like there is something very, very deep in the ocean. Because the ocean is blue in most places, but there it's black. And when you go deep into it, there are, you can see the ocean bed. Let's put it that way. And so
did you say you checked it on Google Earth?
Oh yeah, Google Earth. Just download Google Earth. It's free, and you can just take a look at it. And just looking at the Straits of Hormuz, it truly looks like something went in there and just sliced out a section and went all the way over, you know, I'll call it the right side, and then sliced out another very, very deep section between this island and, you know, whatever.
Are you the
Go ahead.
Are you one of the first people to notice this?
I don't know, maybe.
Well, there's a, can you, maybe you can remember this name, Leonard Moeller, L-E-N-N-A-R-T.
So what
I think
Moeller?
He's Norwegian or Scandinavian. The last name is Moeller. I think it's M-O-E-L-L-E-R. No, maybe it's just M-O-L-L-E-R. I'm not sure. But I have a book. The reason I'm saying this is because you might want to contact him and ask him to check that out, because he's an explorer. And he's already checked out the parting of the Red Sea. And he went out to where the historical historians believe that the Israelites crossed the Red Sea from, when they were released from, when they fled from Egypt during the time of the last passage of Planet X, incidentally. That's when all the great disasters occur. He went there and did some undersea explorations with a robotic, deep sea diving equipment that videotaped some of the structures that were very thoroughly crusted with coral.
Mm-hmm.
But they found axles of chariots.
Oh, my gosh.
Isn't it something? Chariot wheels and axles. Many of them. And there's proof right there that the Egyptian chariots indeed were flooded, inundated, when the Great Wall, the parting of the Red Sea, resumed its normal condition, and the water flowed back and drowned all the entire Egyptian army. So it goes, it's much more than just, it's reality. It's not just a fairy tale.
Well, that's extraordinary. I think
I've got the videotape.
Get in touch with him. Pardon?
I, you know what? I saw it on television. I just videotaped it off of the television last week, where the undersea films of the chariot wheels and axles were shown, and I actually have the original videotape that somebody sent me, so it's true. And plus, he wrote a big, thick book with photographs, many, many photographs to detail that. So, but if you contacted him, maybe he might investigate this, your theory.
That's a good idea. I also have a friend of mine, I can't think what his name is, but, you know, Forbidden History, Forbidden Archaeology, the fellow that wrote that. And that would just be something, I think, that would be up his alley. This is Brandon Allen, and I am talking with John DiNardo. And John, we got another email, and it's from one of our regular listeners, and she cannot find Leonard Moeller anywhere, and she really wants to look him up. Can you give her any idea how to find him?
Well, yeah, during the next commercial, I'll run downstairs and find the book.
Okay, we're not gonna have a next commercial. So if you would find the next book, and I mean, our next commercial is when we close this segment, and we will be playing Paul Pantone as soon as we get back. So if you can email me, I will just post it.
Okay.
And let people know how to find this man.
Okay.
Do you know how to spell his name? That would be the...
I thought it was M-O-L-L-E-R.
Okay, she said she tried every...
Oh, M-O-E-L-L-E-R, but I better look it up.
Yeah, just send it to me, and I will post it over on Rumor Mill.
Okay.
But she said that she was so fascinated with what you were saying. Could you talk any more about him and about this video?
He's an explorer, and he had a woman with him too. These are all dedicated explorers. They're trying to find the biblical evidence in archaeological explorations.
Uh-huh.
And this was essentially the evidence they found of the Egyptians who followed the Israelites. I think most people know the story, but God parted the sea, the Red Sea.
Right.
And the Bible says in Exodus chapter 13 or 14, I think, that a great wind from the east lasted all night long and caused the sea to part. And it's, you know, a lot of people have speculated and said, well, you know, maybe there was a big ridge, a land ridge that rose up, but that's not what the Bible says. It says that it was actually a huge wall of water on both sides of them, and they walked in the deep. They walked into the bed of the ocean. And there was two huge walls, one on each side of them, of water, just as you see in the movie Ten Commandments.
Right.
And then when the Israelites got to the other side, the sea came together and drowned all the Egyptians, their army, their horses, their chariots. So that's what I know about that. But also, he may have done other explorations. For example, some people have found the Ark, Noah's Ark, on the top of Mount Ararat.
Yes.
Just as the Bible states, I believe the
yes.
Bible tells you in Genesis that it's Mount Ararat. And I've got a picture of it, a newspaper article. The newspaper, I should have preserved it, but you can probably find it on the Internet. You can see this huge boat embedded in the top of a mountain. That's basically all I know, but what else? They're exploring for Mount Sinai was another one, another exploration. But I wanted to ask you, did you hear that thing that I just played? Was it clear or was it all?
Well, unfortunately it wasn't, but I knew that we were going into break. I was able to hear the music. It was wonderful, but I wasn't really able to understand what he was saying in many places.
You couldn't hear the words.
Yeah.
It was like he was talking right into the phone, but you couldn't understand
it? Right. I couldn't understand it. Maybe it was
just
me. Maybe everyone else understood it. We don't have a lot of good luck with doing that. With playing something to the computer.
Excuse me, let me tell you real briefly what he was saying was that the ancient Egyptian historical records, they found about there was something called the Ipuwer papyrus, I-P-U-W-E-R, papyrus, created by ancient historians who lived through the time of the Exodus back around 1500 B.C. They, of course, were devastated. Egypt was destroyed. And the entire world, in fact, was devastated by it because we have records from other civilizations at that same period of time where they recounted floods and tsunamis coming in and darkness, all kinds of geological catastrophes in Central America, the Mexicans, the South American Indians, even in China. It's all over the world these catastrophes are recorded. But what the Egyptians recorded, and it was picked up by the Greek historians, Solon, Plato, those people.
Yeah.
They were well-known Greek philosophers and historians, statesmen, etc. They went to Egypt and spoke with the ancient priests who gave them this information and told them all that had happened. There was a great darkness that occurred, and there was a tremendous wind, that you couldn't even light a fire. We have the cases like that now. But with the darkness, that would have to be the earth standing still. I just don't know how to really rationalize or explain how you would have such darkness. If the earth stands still, I mean, it's like nighttime.
Right. So in other words, you're thinking that the Earth stood still with the sun on the other side of the planet.
Right. So some people, and this has been recounted, in so many cases, I think even the Bible talks about it, but many ancient historians from various civilizations talk about this 3 days of darkness where the Earth actually stands still in its rotation. And that, of course, is like, let's draw to show it on a smaller scale. You have a spinning top, a child's top. I mean, I guess everybody in the audience is familiar with a top. Nowadays, kids don't get tops for Christmas anymore, so I don't know. But you just pump it, and it spins very fast, right?
Push down
the pump. And because of its rotational speed, it remains erect. However, when you put the palm of your hand alongside that top and slow it down, when it gets slow enough, it begins to wobble. The top loses its erectness and starts to wobble.
Right.
And that's exactly what's going to happen to planet Earth, what has happened to planet Earth in all of the other previous passages of planet Earth, because some huge comet came by, like a giant hand, but didn't touch it physically, but the gravitational force acting at a distance between that comet and Earth acted like the hand alongside the top, causing it to wobble. When it wobbled, if it wobbles severely enough, it'll just topple over, and that's what happened to planet Earth. We're getting a wobbling now. We've had a wobble. It's called the Chandler wobble. You know, it's a natural phenomenon, I believe, because they've been following it for about over 100 years. But now it's lost its predictability. This Chandler wobble has lost its predictability and might even have stopped. That's a bad sign. It shows that there's another force. There was originally a natural force causing this periodic predictable wobble of planet Earth, say 100 years ago or more, that had been noted. Now we've got an unpredictable change in its wobbling, and I believe it has actually stopped. So this indicates another force has come in and is counteracting the normal force on Earth. I think you're going to see more of a wobble. We're seeing cases where sunrise and sunset times don't seem to be the way they were many decades ago.
Now, I have heard about this wobble before from scientists. I used to be married to a nuclear physicist at the Naval Postgraduate School, and I can remember one time, sitting around the dinner table, and they were talking about when Earth slows down, there's this wobble, and then it could they... Maybe they were just theorizing. I've never heard
this. No, they knew about it even back then. They knew about it. You know, when I went to, when I studied science in college, as a science major in preparation for a science teaching career, my geology professor told me, and this was, I'll never forget this, long before anybody ever heard of Planet X, at least long before I ever heard of it, he said, at one time in Earth's history, Earth actually precessed on its axis, meaning it tilted. And he said, we don't know why. We can't figure out why it happened, but it just makes sense that it would take an enormous force to cause the Earth to tilt on its axis, and that would be a gravitational force of a huge celestial body, maybe something the size of larger than the Moon, something the size of one of the smaller planets that would cause it to happen. But it would have to get pretty close because it's that proximity. The gravitational force between two bodies increases exponentially as a function of distance. So when they get close, that gravitational force increases tremendously. In fact, Mars used to come in very close to Earth, and that's why they call Mars the Great Warrior or Baal. And I believe this is why the ancients used to worship Baal. And in the Bible, you find people worshipped Baal, which was essentially another god, supposedly Satan. And they gave sacrifices. They sacrificed the children to Baal. Why did they do this? Because they were afraid of natural disasters caused by the close passage of Mars. Planet Mars used to pass every 108 years. And you can find this all. The reason I know this is I read this in a book by a wonderful geologist named Donald Wesley Patton. P-A-T-T-E-N. Patton. It's called
I know the name of it.
In the Old Testament. Anyway, Donald Wesley Patton, P-A-T-T-E-N.
Uh-huh.
I'm trying to remember the name of it. It's something in the Old Testament. I have the book right here. Wait a minute. It's on my bookshelf right here someplace. And he talks about that every 108 years. And that's why we had the prophets of Baal in the book of 2 Kings, or 1 Kings, I think it might have been, with Joshua, wait a minute, I'm trying to think.
Oh, well, don't waste your time.
He brought down fire from heaven.
Right.
Anyway, these people were worshiping Baal, and in the story, I'll get his name in a second. He's a very famous prophet.
Sure.
In the story, the 450 prophets of Baal, this relates to Planet X and the phenomenon that we're talking about, so this is highly relevant if we got a moment. Hopefully,
okay,
before the commercial. But when he called down fire from heaven, what he did was he was told by God to pour lots of water in this pit with animals, so he was going to burn these carcasses of animals, and they were laughing at him. They thought it was ridiculous that in order for him to burn them with fire from heaven, he was pouring all this water down there. And how can you burn something when you have a lot of water? That's crazy, right? You want it to be dry. But what happened was the water makes a very good electrical ground. If you were to stand in a puddle of water and grab a hold of an electrical outlet, you would get electrocuted because water really conducts electricity.
Okay.
So what happened was God brought a comet by Earth at that particular time. He had ordained that it would happen at this time to foil the prophets of Baal and to prove that this prophet, it's amazing, I forgot his name, could do this. Anyway, there was a big zapping and arcing of all this plasma from this passing comet that came down like a huge, tremendous electrical discharge, like a glowing red column of lightning coming down right into the perfect attractive, electrically attractive ground, which was a huge pool of water, moat of water surrounding this, and they just incinerated these all these carcasses of animals. And that's a wonderful, amazing miracle, scientifically explained.
Explained, yeah. Well, now...
that's what happens, going to happen to Earth. You're going to see these discharges coming down from the sky, bolts of lightning that look like red columns. Donald Wesley Patton called them flux tubes, flux
now,
in the column
do,
of magnetic.
Do you have any idea when it's going to come? I mean, a lot of people are predicting 2012, but there are others who say we don't have any idea when it's going to happen.
Incidentally, catastrophe, that's the title. Catastrophism in the Old Testament. Catastrophism in the Old Testament by Donna Wesley Patton.
Okay.
Well, I'll tell you when. What we're going to do is look at all the signs around us, and we see what it does. Zechariah Sitchin, the great historian, and he's not a Christian at all, the great historian and ancient archaeologist, who is one of the few people in the world who can decipher the writings from the Sumerian people, ancient Sumerian civilization, these clay tablets. So Zechariah Sitchin wrote a book called The Twelfth Planet.
Right.
And in this book, I remember reading a page, I think 144, where he says that you get these typical floods right before the major geological disasters like earthquakes and meteor showers and meteors falling from the sky and crashing into Earth, being sucked into Earth's gravitational field and crashing into oceans, which is what you had asked me about before, and I never got to it.
Right.
Before you get to these natural disasters, you see this typical, what they call a usual inundation. It happens every time, right before you see these inundations of water. Well, are we getting inundations? I've got so many of them recorded on the Weather Channel over the period, the last 7 years. No, since 2004 I've been videotaping the Weather Channel with severe weather reports, and the floods are just unprecedented, epic floods. In fact, that's what they were called by the Weather Channel. They lasted for a long time in the Midwest. I think it was last year. Now we've had flooding. It's just so many I can't even count them. But they're epic flooding, and that's your first sign, one of your first signs of the major disasters to come. So I think... soon, I don't know when, nobody can tell when, but soon we're going to expect the earthquakes and the volcanic eruptions. God is taking his time. He's going a lot slower than the psychics predicted. All the psychics predicted exactly what will happen and what has happened. The Hopi Indians talked about it in their legends. They described the very same thing that you hear read in the Bible. The only thing is, God confounds the psychics by making them way too premature. Edgar Casey said it was going to happen like sometime in the late 1900s.
Mm-hmm.
It didn't happen yet, but it's going to happen. Edgar Casey, in his sleep, in a trance, predicted that there would be a pole shift. The Earth would shift on its axis so that the warmer climate would become the colder, and the colder climate would become the warmer. We have evidence of that having happened already. Very clear, stark evidence of hundreds of mammoths, huge woolly mammoths. They look like elephants, only they're bigger, and they have brown fur buried under layers of ice. They were in a tropical zone when they were initially frozen. They were eating tropical flowers. Tropical vegetation was dissected out of their mouths and out of their bodies when they were dug up from the ice. So they were flash frozen in an instant. Earth toppled in space. It turned over, and what was a tropical environment went northward. Take the globe of planet Earth and put it into a hammock. Now pull that hammock back. What's going to happen to that model globe of the Earth relative to the ground? If you look at the globe, when you pull it back, the equator starts pointing downward toward the ground, right? And the North Pole starts pointing horizontally. And you know what? In the Bible, that exact same description occurs in the book of Isaiah, chapter 24. It says, the earth shall be removed like a cottage. Now, the incompetent, not sometimes incompetent King James translators, they were very good, but they sometimes got very confused because how could you translate an event like that? That seems so fantastic. So when they took the words and gave us the wrong translation, they said the earth, they tried to translate from the Hebrew to the English, and they said the earth shall be removed like a cottage. But I checked those words, removed and cottage, in the Strong's Concordance of the Hebrew language, and the translation into English is not the earth shall be removed like a cottage, but the earth shall nod like a hammock. Just like you would nod your head up and down. Well, that hammock nods also when you pull it back and swing it. So in the correct Hebrew translation of Isaiah chapter 24, verse 20, just remember, go to Isaiah 24:20, and you'll see is the earth shall nod like a hammock. It's
now
that, a pole shift.
That's exactly what the scientists that were around my table were talking about, was they said the earth slowed down and wobbled.
Exactly. Well, it's the top. You know, when they say this, it's so visual, it's so graphic to understand when you just take a child's top, and everyone can visualize this in their mind, pump the top until it's spinning very fast and the top stands straight up, and then you put your palm of your hand alongside of it so that it grazes the side of the top, and now the top starts slowing down, and what happens? We've all seen it happen, right?
Yeah,
you've all done this. It starts to wobble, and then what happens? When the wobble becomes more and more accentuated to the point where it just topples over.
Right.
Well, first you're going to see the wobbling of the earth, and then you're going to see it topple. Why? Because there's a gigantic hand coming in. Now, again, Planet X is way far away from this. It's way down below the footprint of this fat man, Planet Earth. Just think of Planet Earth as a man with a big fat belly at the equator. And right below his shoes, the feet of his shoes, if he's standing in space and there's no floor below him, right below his shoes, way, way down there, is this huge, massive planet, maybe 60 to 100 times greater in mass than Planet Earth, coming up from the bottom, coming up closer, and so it's closer. But in its field, again, it's like the beehive. The beehive is traveling way far away from us, but the bees surrounding the beehive, some of them are getting pretty close to us because they're really encircling in a pretty big, large field.
Now,
one of those bees is going to be a comet, just like the planet Venus was a comet, and it's going to come by and exert a gravitational force on the side of the Earth comparable to that of a large giant's hand slowing down the spinning motion of Earth. Now, if it comes down below Earth, what's it going to do? It's going to take that top, take planet Earth, and sort of put a spin on it from the bottom, from the South Pole, which would really be disastrous, because then we would really go from north to south. We'd really have to see the Earth problem.
I'm truly wondering how any of the elite think that they can possibly survive some of these things.
Oh, I got to tell you about that before we run out of time.
Yeah, we've only got a few more minutes.
I couldn't understand why they were building these underground cities. They have elaborate multi-billion dollar underground cities all over the world. There's one in Colorado on the foot of the mountains, in Denver, in the town of Crestone, Colorado, where Queen Elizabeth has bought up huge tracts of land. And there's also Mount Weather outside of Washington, D.C. But anyway, I couldn't figure out why they were buying why were they building these underground cities. Then I saw the movie Knowing. Everybody should go see the movie Knowing. Knowing.
Okay.
It's in Blockbuster now. It was recently in the theaters. Go to Blockbuster and get Knowing. Because
or you
at
can
the
go
end
to
of the movie, they are telling us.
Hulu.com, they have it for free.
Right. At the end of the movie, go see the trailer. Look for the trailer on the internet of the movie Knowing.
Sure.
It's a fascinating movie. I won't tell you what's going to happen. I don't want to ruin the movie for anybody. But all I'll say is this. I firmly believe that what they portray at the end of the movie is a warning to us as to what is actually going to happen in the near future. I won't tell you because I don't want to ruin the movie. But that's why, and it finally struck me, that's why the power elite are building underground cities.
Oh, now boy,
I know
we're
why.
All going to have to watch it. Yes.
But I won't tell you until you see it. When you see it, you'll know why they're building underground cities.
Okay, well, now you've got me hooked. I'm going to spend the whole day watching it, probably.
When you see the trailer, you definitely want to go get it. on the internet.
Well, John, what do you think people can do to prepare?
Okay, physically, what God told us in the Bible, in the book of Genesis, how Joseph prepared Egypt. He told of the dream that the Pharaoh had, I believe, and the seven fat cows and seven lean cows, and God gave the interpretation of the dream to Joseph, meaning store up. You're going to have bad times, so start getting prepared. Store food. You know what kind of food. I don't have to go into details. So two things people need is food, water, and they need to kill bacteria, germs.
Yeah.
So get the disinfectants, and I won't go into the details, but you know all the natural disinfectants like silver and oil of oregano and things like that. There are a number of others, too. Olive leaf extract, grapefruit, not grapeseed, which is good, but grapefruit seed extract, and things like that kill bacteria. So you need food, water, most important, and antibacterial agents. But you have to talk to God. Like right now, when I don't talk to God enough, I get too busy with my life.
Yeah,
I have
that's
to talk
the most
to him.
Important thing.
Yeah, and I say, I don't know what to say to you, but you're the teacher, I'm the student, and the student usually just waits for the teacher to talk. So I'm going to wait for you. I know you're with me. I know I'm busy, but I'm waiting for you to talk to my mind.
And this is a perfect
and you, that will save you.
Wait
that
for God. Thank you so much, John, for being a guest here on Radio RNN. And folks, stay tuned, because we're going to have the first half of the pre-recorded interview with Paul Panto, which is going to horrify you, and yet you're going to laugh. There's some parts where you're going to laugh, too. So please stay tuned. Right here on the Micro Effect Radio Broadcast Network. And I will see you tomorrow with Wayne Jett and an overall of what's going on in the world these days.